From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on August 28, 2014. Baylor University released a study that found that cell phone addiction is becoming a threat to academic performance. The study found that female students spend an average of 10 hours a day on their cell phones in some capacity. Male students, about 8 hours. The study concluded that addiction is a very real concern. Just a generation ago, 75% of American children played outside daily. Today, only about 25% do. And as we move into summer, parents might feel more and more frustration with addiction to mobile technology or the way cell phones can get in the way of going outside. The Huffington Post puts it this way: kids are spending less time outside these days than chickens or prisoners. So what can we do about that? Here's one idea. The Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm in Wayne County is offering a series of events called Generation at Risk. Their first event was this past weekend. Two more are coming up. We'll tell you about that. And their goal is to help adults learn how to effectively get kids away from digital media by offering interesting, stimulating outdoor activities. Let's welcome our panel for the hour as we talk about this, and we'll invite your phone calls. Listeners, if you want to talk about mobile technology, the way it infringes on getting outside, concern about kids, or maybe concern about our own addiction to mobile technology, call the program 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. In studio for the hour is Steve Amon, co-founder and president of the Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm. That's a not-for-profit education center offering workshops, retreats, and activities that aim to honor and nurture self, community, and the earth. And Steve, thanks for being here.
Hi, Evan. Happy to be here.
Also here is Jenny Reedman-Dangler. She's a licensed clinical social worker with a private practice in Rochester, 14 years experience as a mental health therapist providing counseling services to kids, adults, and families. Jenny, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Mike Johansson's here, social media strategist, a lecturer at RIT, and a good friend of this program. Mike, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Also here is Carol Yukono. She lives in Greece now. She's a retired Rochester City School District teacher, taught computer science and digital media for more than 30 years. Is that right, Carol? And Carol's here along with her granddaughter, Marley Knapp. Marley is 7 years old. Marley, welcome to the program. Nice to see you, Marley.
Say thank you.
Thank you.
And Carol and Marley attended this past weekend out at Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm. And Carol, I want to start with you. Why did you and Marley attend this past weekend?
Well, I just really...
Marley's saying, get closer to the mic, Grandma. There you go.
I agree that it's really important for the kids to be outside and playing and getting dirty and having a lot of fun and learning about nature. And when I heard about this, I just thought this would be a wonderful thing to do with my grandchild.
And you think about your 7-year-old. I've got a 3-year-old. He knows how to operate a cell phone. We try not to make it an ever-present thing. But do you worry about that, Carol?
I do. She's much more... talented and able to do things that she needs to be right now.
Marley, how was the weekend event out at the farm? Tell us about that. How was it?
Good.
It was good. All right, Carol, you want to give us the rundown? What was it like?
I think it was really, it was all-encompassing. We concentrated on different elements, air, land, the fire. The kids learned different ways to make fire. Each of the kids planted a tree. There was hiking. We did paper airplanes to do a little bit and looked at different bird feathers to learn about why feathers are the way they are for different birds and what their purposes were. We did a lot of activity. There was a lot of hands-on and a lot of movement.
And no cell phones.
There were some cell phones, but I don't think they were really used. They weren't used for communication.
There you
really.
Go.
I mean, I think a watch or something, or pictures.
And Carol, I don't want to sound curmudgeonly. I'm always careful about not making it sound like things were always better in the past. But in this case, I do think of my own childhood. I'm glad I grew up without a cell phone, without email and those things. I know we're not going back. That's impossible. But you taught digital media for more than 3 decades. And I have to think, even if parents have been trying since the beginning of time to get kids to do more physical stuff in the outdoor settings, I have to think that the change in 3 to 4 decades for you has been remarkable.
It has. It has. I've always been one to encourage getting outside, putting this stuff down and going outside. But there's so many things. The media, the technology could be used for so many positive things. And it's just when it's used as a substitute that it really starts to get in the way.
Absolutely.
But it opens up a lot of doors, too.
Yeah, no one here is saying that technology is all bad. The concern is when it becomes sort of all-consuming. So Steve Amon, co-founder and president of Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm. First of all, I tried to describe what you are and what you do out there. Are you in Newark, Wayne County? Is that right?
Yes, we're right outside the village of Newark in the town of Arcadia, actually.
And you got more than 100 acres?
There's 120 acres there.
And what exactly are you?
Well, Sanctuary is a little different than your typical county parks. We organize programs that are geared towards getting people connected to the land, especially those who have maybe wanted to get out in nature a little bit but have a fear of it or are looking for somebody else to kind of do the heavy lifting. And Sanctuary has done that over the last 13 years or so. We've done programs, everything from basket making to drum making to primitive skills. This Generation at Risk program is a program we've been working on for the last 11 months to bring kind of as our signature program, something that we really saw a need for.
So you see a need with the concern about kids and technology and maybe not getting out to experience the outdoors the way they did in generations and generations ago. You had your first event. If you go to the website for Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm and click on events, you can find out how to sign up. You've got events on Generation at Risk coming up in July and September, and you still have openings. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and you heard Carol talk about how it went. How do you think it went?
It was beyond my wildest dreams. We had originally hoped for more families to come, and as often works out, it was just perfect the way it was. We had a great mix of staff and participants. The weather cooperated. Even the bugs stayed away. The day unfolded in a magical way, and the kids, and I think the adults, too, or what we were referring to as the elders, the grandparents, or in some cases, aunts, uncles, parents, I think they all saw the value. They inherently knew it. That's what drew them there initially. But once they got their feet wet and immersed in it a little bit, I think they really, the kids and the adults both saw the value of getting away from the digital world. As you said, it's not that these are bad things. These are great tools. Unfortunately, when we lean on them too much, my opinion is then some of our other gifts and tools in life tend to atrophy a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think about my 3-year-old, and I think about what might soon change. And here's an example. If I am hanging with my 3-year-old and it's 6 o'clock at night and my wife is working as she often is late, and I get a cancellation for the next day in the program, well, that sends me into scrambling mode to figure out what's going to happen. It happens once in a while. And if I pull my phone out, my son will say to me, "Put your phone back in your pocket." And I love that he says that. I really do. And I don't want to be somebody who's always got it out. I don't want him to have that image of me. And there are times where I'm more guilty than others. I think any parent can relate to that. What I don't know is when that, you know, that switch will flip and he will want that technology in his hands more often. Right now, he wants to be outside as much as he can all the time. And he doesn't want mom or dad to have the cell phone out. And I get that. I'm glad that he doesn't. But Jenny, when does it start to, every kid's different. When should I be worried that may start to switch on me?
So in my practice with children, seeing a red flag that something might be needing some attention, you might see really over-focused on technology. You may see perhaps some acting out behavior after there's been some contact with technology, in particular, perhaps the internet with our teens also, I think, can get pretty problematic if they're not using it appropriately. And yes, I've seen children where there's been depression and anxiety, and the main issue has been around inappropriate use of social media or someone contacting them who they don't know, which of course is a big fear of all of ours for our children.
And when you talk about depression and anxiety related to social media, that can come in many different forms. Before the hour began, we were talking about the fact that you've encountered children who are depressed because they don't get enough likes on Facebook.
Correct.
That's amazing. I mean,
correct.
It's. I shouldn't think it's amazing, but that's really scary.
It is scary. And what I find, too, for myself as a practitioner, which is kind of new territory for me, is how can I support that individual, child, teen, to have their self-esteem based on something that's a little bit more innate and as opposed to social media needs.
That's a hard question because, again, I'm not somebody who thinks Facebook is evil. I think it can be narcissistic and used in ways that are probably – I'm not surprised that it would lead to these kind of bad feelings that kids have.
Yes.
But how do you tell a kid, relax, the number of Facebook likes is not the measure of your worth? I mean, it's easy to say it, but it's another for a child to receive the message.
Correct. And I think what's important – for us to remember as parents and caretakers of children is that we are there to educate them on technology and the benefits of it and, unfortunately, some negative things that can happen, such as somebody depending on that for their self-esteem, and really being committed to helping our children develop their self-esteem, not so much on social media.
As we go throughout this hour, we're going to talk also about setting limits and rules and how you approach it. I'd love to hear from you if you're a parent and what the rules are with social media. Even with things like video games, all forms of media, do you set limits and rules for your kids? And does it change in the summer months, for example? Does it change when they're out of school? We'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Ginny Reedman-Dangler is going to tell us what we've been doing wrong. I'm kidding. But we are going to talk about that delicate line that parents have when it comes to setting rules and what happens there. But Mike Johansson, I want to ask you to share a story with our audience. Mike is not only a social media strategist, but someone who lectures on social media, and there is a really interesting TED Talk. And I want you to tell our audience, this is a great moment for them to flag something and go watch it sometime. What's the name of the TED Talk, and then how do you incorporate that in class? I love this story.
Yeah, so Sherry Turkle wrote a book, and she's written several books, but she's a professor at MIT, and she wrote a book called Together But Alone, all about how technology is changing our relationships. And based on that book, she gave a fairly short, I think it's about 15, 18-minute TED Talk. You can find it on YouTube, Sherry Turkle, T-U-R-K-L-E, based on Together But Alone. And that's part of a module in my critical practice and social media class at RIT. And after they've watched the video, the students have to have an online discussion where they have to post an original thought, and then they have to respond a couple of times to classmates' thoughts. And what's interesting to me is that about 20 to 25% of the students are not entirely sure that Sherry's addressing a serious problem. But the rest of them jump all over them and say, absolutely, this is a problem. And
they get it.
Yeah.
And most of them.
Yeah. And these are kids who are 19, 20, 21, whose exposure to 24/7 media availability is relatively short. In the terms of smartphones, these things started coming into their lives or being available, I guess, when they were pretty far along in high school. For younger kids, they've been exposed to stuff much earlier, 7th grade, 8th grade. And to answer your earlier question about when you should be worried about your 3-year-old, let me just say this about that. I think school's a great thing, but when kids start kindergarten, like my own daughter, who's now 22, I would eat all kinds of foods and have all kinds of experiences and not have a problem doing them until she started kindergarten. And then clearly the message over time at school became, you do what? Ugh.
And it changed your eating habits and it changed.
It did.
And you're saying that's just an example.
And I think that what happens is this quote unquote normalization that happens once kids get exposed to big groups of kids. They start to see quote unquote what is normative behavior. And they want to either imitate it or they want to stop doing things that aren't.
All right. Well, we're seeing the phone calls and comments start to flood in here. If you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK. First up is Topher in Rochester. Go ahead, Topher.
Hey, Evan, it's Topher. I'm a first-time caller, but a long-time listener. How you doing?
Very good. Thanks for calling the program. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm actually friends with your wife through Love Abooze. My wife.
Oh, I know this Topher. There you go.
We've got a lot of children in our lives, but we have three of our own. And you were talking about boundaries with technology. We give our kids. We have a 3, a 7, and a 10-year-old, and we give them 1 hour a day with technology. But it's nice because they want that hour so badly, except especially our 10-year-old who wants to play Minecraft all day every day. So he will push through getting his chores done, doing all of the things that his schoolwork and all the things he needs to do first, so he can get to that. So it's kind of nice to have that hour of downtime and let him be on technology. But we try not to go any further than that usually.
How do your kids respond to the rules?
Usually, when he's on it and we say, okay, 10 minutes left, he's fine, they're all good. But then when the time comes where he has to turn it off, we usually have like a little elixir time or a little grace period where he's supposed to be getting off. And then once he's off, we definitely notice it's like his brain is detoxing from all the stimulation. So for a little while, he'll be, some days, he'll be mad for a few minutes and he'll be bored. But I definitely, when he starts saying I'm bored, I know there's about 3 or 4 minutes left before his brain kicks into the next thing and then he's doing something. So it's like a detoxing time that we work through. So
very interesting. Topher, thanks for the call and thanks for listening to the program. It's great to get your perspective.
Yeah, man. Thanks for all you do for Rochester, and we'll keep listening, man.
Oh, that's very nice of you. That's Topher in Rochester calling. Jenny, it sounded like a reasonable approach there?
I think it did sound like a very reasonable approach. I think limits, especially starting at a young age, are really important as opposed to when a child turns 10 or 11 or 12 and then setting the limits. So I think the key from what this listener was talking about, setting limits at an early age. Some folks, there's certain parts in the day where they will set limits with their children, perhaps no cell phone at the dinner table, into the evening, no cell phone during homework time, and perhaps a certain time where all media is stopped into the evening.
I opened the hour by talking about the fact that Baylor University has studied at least the impact on academics for college students, so late teenagers, young adults, and they're concerned about real addiction. We're talking about unable to disengage, telling a 20-year-old, you've got to go a day without your phone and watching what would happen, and it would not be good. And they use the word addiction in a very real sense. Is that realistic, Jen?
It is realistic. And when I was looking at some research recently, I saw that word quite a bit, addiction, with the social media.
I'm looking at some of the other stats that Mike Johansson said along, just the time online. Mike Pugh and others have studied this. I think addiction's probably not overstating, probably not an overstatement, is it?
No, I don't think it is. But I'm definitely in the camp of, I tend to think it's not the technology that's the problem. I tend to think it's the people that are the problem. And there's been too much unbridled availability and usage of these things without adult supervision. Goes back to when I was a kid, there were kids in my neighborhood whose parents plonked them in front of the TV for hours on end.
So it becomes a babysitter.
Yeah, yeah. And once that habit is formed, it becomes, I think, part of, I didn't get my 3 hours on social media today. Wah.
Right. And so what are some of the stats that jump out to you, Mike?
Well, some of the ones that sort of shocked me a little bit were 95% of all teens 12 to 17 are online. And by that, I think Pew meant they were online for at least an hour a day.
Okay.
95%. That's a lot. Kids age 8 to 18 spend on average 44.5 hours per week. That's a little over six and a half hours a day.
That's 2 full days a week.
In front of screens.
In front of screens.
Okay. And Nearly 23% of 8 to 18-year-olds report that they feel, quote-unquote, addicted to video games, unquote. 31% of males, 13% of females. That's a Harris 2013 survey. And some of these other ones down here, 74%, this was from April 2015, 74% of teenagers either have or have access to a smartphone. And as we were talking before the show, I think the smartphone really is the key here. Because a smartphone now means you have the web in your pocket, you have your social media in your pocket, it's with you all the time. There's really no barrier to being on it all the time.
All the time. And along those lines, the next number on that list, only 2% of teens 13 to 17 report going online less than weekly. So one out of 50 American children is now not online, essentially.
Yeah, probably Amish.
Probably,
and I'm not being facetious. That's probably right. Yeah,
that's probably right. It is ubiquitous. It's remarkable. I mean, Steve Amon, when you were growing up here, this is going to sound like the get off my lawn speech, but I remember growing up and then mom saying, you know, in the afternoon, be home by dinner, and there was a big forest in our backyard, and the kids would go play. And yeah, she'd probably be arrested now for doing that. But it's a different mentality. What was it like for you growing up?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was different. I grew up in Irondequoit on a farm, a fruit farm, that backed up to Irondequoit Bay. And we either had farm chores, or if we did try to come inside and watch TV, we got a little bit of that maybe, and we were told to go out and find something to do, or I'll find something for you to do.
I'll find something. Yeah. I've heard that phrase.
And, you know, it didn't take too long to figure out. It was more fun to go out in the woods and build a fort and dam up the creek and create games that included, you know, bow and arrows or sticks or swords or whatever. It was the thing is, it gave us that opportunity to be creative. And I don't think we had a clue that's what was occurring at the time. And I don't think our parents really knew that, but I think inherently they knew that there was something beneficial about booting us outdoors and not letting us just sit in front of that television set hour after hour.
Yeah, once again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the impact of digital media, especially on kids and young adults, and as we move into the summer months, ways to try to mitigate that, not to take it away, but to make sure it is appropriate. And Jake writes to us, one of the things I don't think parents understand is how useful mobile devices are for education. Khan Academy can augment, if not replace, conventional education. He says, I don't see heavy use as a problem so much as the kids that replace real socializing with online social networks. He says, my 18-year-old stepson spends a huge chunk of his time online, but it doesn't worry me because I also see him interacting in real life. It surprises me so many parents don't see when real problems are occurring. Ginny, as someone who works with families, works with kids, Jake's saying the distinction is, I'm watching. I'm not just saying you're online too much. I'm saying, do you have real-life interactions? And if you don't, then I'm going to start to worry.
Mm-hmm.
Good way to measure it?
Absolutely. If we're seeing children, teens, using social media as their complete opportunity for socializing with peers, and that's it, then that is a problem. And we see it's a problem when they start to go into work. I've heard stories about people having difficulty engaging with individuals and with, let's say, their first job, because they just haven't had that ongoing opportunity for social development and communication outside of social media.
And it's so difficult for parents to keep up with all the different things kids are doing online. Mike Johansson's been on this program, and every time I see Mike, there's something else. Now, everyone's on Periscope. Mike, for people who haven't been on Periscope, quick explanation?
It's a live streaming video app, so you can live stream basically anything from a smartphone.
And I'm constantly amazed at the fact that people will live stream just about anything, and it will be the most mundane things, and there will be at least 2 dozen people somewhere in the world following it.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening all the time, isn't it?
Yeah. The bored find their own entertainment via their little smartphone, which is you know, kind of sad in a way. I mean, one example I had of sort of younger people and social difficulty is the very first time in my critical practice social media class, I asked for 4 volunteers to take their smartphones out of the classroom and we were going to do a Google Hangout, which is just a live video feed with multiple people, and have them interview people walking around campus for the, and so we'd all be fed back into the classroom. One student who's very savvy and wants to get into broadcasting immediately put his hand up. He was great. Bernard was great. But getting the other three was like pulling teeth. You mean we just talk to strangers? You mean we just walk up to strangers? How do you do that? Amazing.
Yeah. Let me grab Bill in Penfield. Go ahead, Bill.
Having a great show. Good answers. The kids that I see today are being taught in the classroom to use the social networking, et cetera, to do their homework, to refer things to other students. They come home with the iPad, and the teacher has put the answers to the questions on the school's website. So they are being taught at an early age to use technology, i.e. jump to the adult. The adults today are just as bad as the kids are because the adults are playing baseball, Warcraft, Empire games. They're spending, and they have access to credit cards where the kids don't. So we were taught to use the network. And the interesting thing, the people who created the network are now on the other internet, the net two. They don't want any part of us anymore. I'm interested in your comments on that.
Bill, thanks for the call. Mike Johansson, what are you pointing to over there?
Oh, the graphic I sent you, Jumio, an online credentials management company in California, surveyed people about where they use their cell phones. And this gets at the whole idea of cell phones are so, they're everywhere in our lives. And what amazed me is and I can't even say some of the stuff on radio, but where American adults are using their cell phones, 35% in a movie theater, hardly surprising, 33% on a date, 32% at a school child or school function, 55% while driving, 12% in the shower, and 19% at a church.
19% at church? Come on, churchgoers. What's going on there? One out of five people in church are on a cell phone? Oh, my goodness. I think Bill's point is absolutely on the money. Every time we wag our finger at kids, we sort of forget the fact that we're modeling certain behaviors. Harvard Business School studied it, and it's amazing how much people need to feel like they have to check it all throughout the day. Email, social media, et cetera. 70% said they checked their smartphone within an hour of getting up. 56% checked their phone within an hour of going to sleep. 48% check it over the weekend, including Friday and Saturday nights. 51% check continuously, even hour to hour, during vacation. During vacation. There's no way Steve Amon's doing that. You strike me as the kind of guy who probably never takes vacation, but I hope you do. And my guess is you wouldn't be checking your phone all vacation.
I check it from time to time. I don't have a smartphone. And part of the reason I don't have one is because I've seen what's happened to so many people that I care about. They spend, my judgment, an inordinate amount of time looking at that. And the thing that gets me is I think everybody that is wanting to look at their cell phone or check their email regularly, there's an unthought feeling there. What am I missing? What am I missing? And for those people that don't take a walk out in nature every now and then, that don't expose their kids to that, they don't understand what they're missing. And you're quoting some statistics here, and there's one that I want to bring up. I kind of put nature in the same category as art, and an analysis by the College Board showed that students who studied the arts for more than 4 years scored 44 points higher on the math portion and 59 points higher on the verbal section of the SAT. And so that kind of goes back to that creativity piece I was saying. And you don't even have to do anything. You just go out and sit on a log for 15 minutes, and I guarantee there will be something absorbed that will serve later in life. And for me, that's where getting my grandkids out and offering this to other folks to do that as well, making it easy. We'll do the heavy lifting. That's an opportunity to get away from that digital world for a little while.
You're hearing the voice of Steve Amon, co-founder and president of Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm. That's a not-for-profit education center. It's out in Wayne County, just outside the village of Newark, and he's talking about a series of events that they're doing called Generation at Risk, Unplugging Your Grandchildren and Connecting Them with Nature. Their first event was this past weekend, and they've got two more coming up, July 25th and September 19th. And if people want to get involved, what's the cost, Steve?
It's $75 per day, and that's for the whole family. It can be, you know, one or two grandparents or parents or aunts, uncles, whatever, and any number of kids. Yeah.
Okay, and people can register or get involved how?
On the website, www.crowfieldsanctuary.org.
Crowfieldsanctuary.org if you want to check out their Generation at Risk event. And Carol Yukono was there this past weekend with Marley Knapp, her 7-year-old granddaughter. And Carol told us earlier it was highly valuable. And maybe, Carol, this is a good reminder for all of us adults, too. Again, not just to wag fingers at kids, but we should all probably be outside a little bit more. What do you think?
Absolutely. There's times when we're both sitting at the kitchen table and we're on something, her tablet, my phone, the computer, the TV, and time just kind of gets away. And it really would be a good time to go take a walk around the block or go check the garden or something. So, yes. We've both come home with something from the weekend. We're going to nurture our seeds that we planted and hopefully get them to grow and get them into the garden. So that's something we did out there that we brought home.
Marla, you can jump in and tell us about that if you want to. I know you're...
What? Tell them about Ruby.
Marley's her 7-year-old granddaughter who's been a little shy, but she's giving Carol all the little props behind the scenes.
Well, one of the things that they did, I kind of stepped out of this just because I had a little trouble walking on the uneven ground for the hike, but the kids all went on a hike with Steve and other elders, and they each child planted a tree and named it, and Marley named hers Ruby. And she'll be able to check on it in July and September to see how it's doing. But we also planted some seeds in little cups and brought them home.
That's great.
And came home with some other activities to keep us outside, too, to do leaf rubbings and take a walk and notice things and make note of stuff and come up with stories.
That's
and whatever.
Great.
So there's homework for this too, that
but fun homework, well, the
fun
kind that you can nurture,
to get us outside,
right?
More.
Yeah, the kind that you can take ownership of. I learned a great lesson last weekend, Steve, when I had to plant a bunch of new grass seed around the area, and my son wanted to help, and he has his own wheelbarrow and his own tools, and so I said okay, and I thought, well, this is going to inhibit the day, but I'll let him anyway, and he probably helped me for 6 full hours, and actually did his own loads of grass seed planting, and now he got to see some of the seed growing this weekend, and
awesome.
he takes ownership of it. I mean, it taught me as a parent that kids want to take ownership of things and feel connected to outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably was too cynical about it before he picked up his wheelbarrow, and I learned that lesson pretty quickly.
And part of the beauty of that, Evan, is it gives you an opportunity to tell a story at some point in the future. You shared an experience, good chance that he'll remember at least for a while, and you'll remember it maybe for the rest of your life.
I am not going to forget that. I am not going to forget that. I'm way late for a break. And then Bill in Spencerport, we're coming to you when we come back. If you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We're talking about setting limits and making sure kids get enough time outside, away from mobile technology, some of the concerns about that and what to do about it this hour on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on the Next Connections. NASA says there are new concerns about a melting ice shelf. We'll talk about the implications for climate change and more. Then second hour, the surprising story of the birth of Arlington National Cemetery. As we approach Memorial Day, it's a story you've almost certainly never heard before. Author Carlo DeVito joins us to tell us how he uncovered it. Join the conversation Tuesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections, and we're talking about our time outside versus online, especially for kids and especially as we move into those great outdoor months where, I think parents can be frustrated at times when kids want to be on the cell phone all the time. Baylor University found that college-age females spend 10 hours a day at some places on the phone in some capacity, males 8 hours a day. And our panel's talking about that. You just heard Carol Yukono, who is a retired Rochester City School District teacher, and she and her 7-year-old granddaughter, Marley, who's here, recently attended an event out where Steve Amon is. Steve is the co-founder and president of Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm, and they're doing a series of events on this subject called Generation at Risk, so we're talking about that. Also talking to Mike Johansson, a social media strategist and a lecturer at RIT, and Ginny Reedman-Dangler is a licensed clinical social worker with private practice in Rochester and 14 years' experience as a mental health therapist with counseling services for kids, adults, and families. Back to the phones, Bill and Spencer Port's been waiting. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, hi, Evan. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm 63, and I don't even have a smartphone, although I do use a cell phone. But I remember something from my childhood growing up. One of the smartest kids in our class, turned out to be the valedictorian in high school, did not have a TV in the house. And I thought, wow, that's really strange. I thought his parents were kind of abusive in that regard. But then I got thinking about it after I grew up, and I'm thinking, part of the reason he was so smart is because they did a lot of reading in that house. They weren't distracted by TV. So I'm wondering, today's parents, young parents, are any of them brave enough, or would they consider not allowing the kid to have a cell phone at all, smartphone at all?
Bill, thanks. It's a very good question, and it was going to lead into what my next question was when does that pressure start for a phone for kids? Some parents tell us 6, 7, 8 years old, the kid knows they want their own. A lot of parents wait longer. But Bill's saying maybe not even at all. First of all, Ginny Reedman-Dangler, not at all. Says say no to a phone. It would be hard, I think, but...
Well, absolutely. It is difficult. And I think that each case is different. Each child is different. And what's happening is... there's a lot of peer pressure, and it might not even be direct peer pressure, but the kid's saying, I want a cell phone, or I want this because so-and-so has this. And again, going back to when they're young and getting them outside and developing problem-solving skills, communication skills, letting them have fun outside so that when they get to a point where they might be feeling pressure to have a phone for this or that, perhaps allowing a phone but putting the limits on and continuing with the outside activities.
Mm-hmm. Mike Johansson?
Well, I'm probably the wrong generation to ask. I mean, my daughter's 22, and so cell phones didn't become an issue until she was, a teen, frankly. So it really wasn't an issue per se.
And aren't you so relieved about that?
Yeah, actually, I truly am. And they were dumb phones, too. I mean, they were there literally for calling. But texting fairly quickly became an issue. And we did have some serious discussions about how much time was being spent texting. Sure, you can text with people, but these are the same kids you're seeing all day long in school. Why are you spending so much time texting?
Why are you texting when you're sitting in a group of people?
Right.
And your face is in your phone, yes.
Yeah, and the answer always was, because we can, and I'm bored. And it's like, well, here's a bookshelf. Put the phone down. And some of those arguments were a little uncomfortable. I'm grateful that my daughter at 22, I think, sort of has a fairly good balance on these things. But I do worry about the generations that are younger.
Yeah. And Carol, I know you wanted to jump in there as well. Go ahead.
Well, as a single parent, it was very handy for my daughter as a teenager to have a phone. And for me, but again, it wasn't a smartphone to use for everything. We could communicate. It's like we weren't of the generation where you'd come home from a field trip and be sitting outside the school for an hour waiting for mom to come pick you up because you got back early. We could call and know, or I got out of work earlier, whatever. But I forget what I was going to say. But I mean...
No, I think you're saying that those things are functional. And that helps people stay connected, I know.
Mm-hmm. I do have a smartphone, and Marley does use it at times. But she has a couple of her own games on it. But if she sees something she wants, first of all, we're not buying anything. If there's a free app and it's something I think she can do okay, she's got to figure out what comes off before something comes on. But I put a magazine, a children's magazine on it, And we were with one of her friends one day, and Marley wanted to show her the magazine. And she said, read a magazine? Who reads anything anymore? Mm. What, you read books and stuff? It's like, you're 6 years old. What are you saying something like that for?
Well, again, Marley, who's sitting here, is seven. Marley, can I ask you, what do you like to do on the phone?
I like to read the books on there.
Like to read the books on there? Are there games or anything else you like to do, Marley?
I like
the cooking games.
The cooking games.
Okay, some games that Carol feels good about on maybe an educational value, and there are some. I mean, like I can attest as a parent of a 3-year-old, there are little letter and number apps that he has used, not often, but but I am impressed with some of the educational stuff, but. But yeah, I worry about that. Are they reading? And I guess that's what a lot of this is about. Steve, what do you think?
Well, so for me, so much of life comes down to four little words that have kind of become a mantra for me, and that is balance is the key. And there's a great place for technology in our lives today. There's no question about that. That came up earlier. Did at Generation at Risk this past Saturday? Did people pull out their smartphones in that? And the staff talked about it a little bit ahead of time. Did we want to extend an invitation to people to leave their phones in their cars even? We decided not to. We thought, well, if nothing else, they may want to take pictures. But it's also been pointed out that it's an awesome tool to take in the woods even, out in nature. There's apps on there that can help me identify plants and
birds.
Birds, I mean, all kinds of things in nature. But if I go back to that, balance is the key. You know, some of the time, it's just going to benefit me to shut it off or leave it in my pocket or leave it back home. And that goes, I think, for everybody. And there's times when it's awesome to be able to pull it out and use it as a resource.
Yeah. And before I get back to your phone calls, Steve's comment just make me think of the fact that it's one thing if you're standing in the forest and you see a bird fly by and you say, that's beautiful. I've got to figure out what that is. You can pull out your smartphone and maybe you know. That's an amazing tool at that moment. It's another to be at the Grand Canyon and you see 100 tourists at the Grand Canyon and 98 of them are looking through their phones at the Grand Canyon. And I wondering if Mike Johansson,
well,
you want to defer on that?
Well, yeah, and I think it's a generational thing. And in fact, my wife and I have noticed this. We go to a sporting event like the Red Wings.
Yes.
And you'll see that for a certain type of person, and particularly a generation, the world is... The experience didn't happen unless you took a selfie or took a picture at the event. In other words, it's almost like if you didn't put a picture on Facebook, it didn't happen, which is stunning to me, absolutely stunning. I don't get that, but my daughter thinks, you know, I'm crazy.
Okay, well,
for all kinds of reasons, but that particularly, you know.
I'm with you on that because I think of a sporting event, and especially think of sporting events where you pay, you know, maybe $100 or more for a ticket, and you're there at this event, and some of the best athletes in the world are 50 feet from you, and you're watching these moments through a phone. That game is being broadcast around the world by somebody. They don't need your little cell phone video. Why not just take the time to experience it with your own eyes right there? Why? I've never understood that, but it's become very common.
Yeah, and the whole selfie thing is, you know, I understand the documentary kind of thing. You know, we were at this event, but I see people doing this for 20 and 30 minutes at a time, and this is, you know, one, I would think one selfie would do it.
By the way, this is not just a children issue with selfies. David Muir, ABC News anchor, got in trouble last week. And did you see that, Mike?
No.
He was at the Amtrak crash scene, and he bumped into an old colleague from Syracuse. And she's now, I think, in Philadelphia. And she said, David, can we grab a selfie together? And they took a selfie, and they are smiling as wide as can be. And she posted on Twitter. And immediate backlash. People saying, oh, eight people died in an Amtrak crash. And this is what you're taking the time to do, is post smiling selfies. Bad form. Very interesting. And I think it was a reminder that we can become so immersed in that kind of culture that we're not seeing the bigger picture.
Sure. And one of the things, and we talk about this in the social media class, is that there are absolutely times when social media apps have a role to play. You know, the check-in swarm and Foursquare, you know, people checking in is keeping track of where they spent time. But that should take 30 seconds when you first arrive at the place, and then you put the phone away and forget about it. I mean, that's what I do. I like to know where I've spent my time in the last month, so I use a thing called Swarm. But it doesn't mean I'm sitting there obsessively while I'm waiting for my food, like I see so many people in a restaurant, on the screen the whole time. Mm-hmm. There's people across the table from me. We have conversations. That's kind of why we're having a meal together.
Absolutely.
Suggestion for everybody to put their...
You grab that microphone. There you go, Carol. Yep.
There's a suggestion I've seen. Everybody, when you go out to dinner, everybody stacks their phones in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
And the first one to pick up their phone pays the check.
That's a cosign. That's a good one. All right, Catherine in Ontario County. Go ahead, Catherine.
Yes, I've been listening to the conversations about raising kids, and I am the parent of a mid-20s kind of guy. And so we went through the cell phone. It was pre-smartphone. We're somewhat Luddite in our approach, so we had all kinds of discussions about cell phone and video games when he was in high school in particular. And where we ran into more challenges is when peer interactions became more prevalent, because all his buddies were playing video games, and we had very limited allowance for that in our own household. But I wanted to just report that we went on long family vacations, camping vacations, away from cell phone access every summer, and that was a good counterbalance to that. And actually, he went on to become an IT graduate of RIT and is a programmer now, but I also watched that there's a lot more balance, as Steve Ammon was saying, about spending time hiking and doing other things. So I guess on the other side of the whole piece, and watching him now as a young adult, I see that even though he's much more engaged with electronics than his father and I ever will be, he's also doing other things with his life. And I just wanted to offer that as a kind of counterbalance.
Catherine, yeah, thanks for the phone call. And I appreciate the perspective there. Balance is that word that Steve's been, I think that's one thing that we'll take from this hour. Not that we're, that even Steve is advocating a total lack of screen time. It's a question of balance. As we've heard from a number of listeners, Mike writes to us on the web, when we lived on a farm in Minnesota, we limited our kids to 10 hours of electronic boxes per week in the summer. That afforded them time to watch a few movies or allocate their time differently. My son was 3 years older than my daughter. He used his time more conservatively, allocating it across the days. My daughter was really into Disney movies, so she used up her hours fairly quickly in the week. The beauty of this was that kids had choice and could learn strategies from each other. And of course, we had plenty of outdoor creative time, building a treehouse and a field of dreams and a sandbox on 360 acres. Interesting, Mike. And here's Becky writing to us online. Becky says, I so echo Bill's earlier point on art and creativity and nature being similar to art. Our brains absolutely need boredom and white space to grow creativity. True story, I was at the library last week and a little girl begged her mother to go play on the iPads at the library. I honestly think books are part of the antidote to life online. Books are the ultimate immersive experience. They are a decision to commit to something wholly. My mother took us for ice cream periodically over the summer. We were allowed one topping per book. I think I had gummy worms, Reese's Pieces, Sprinkles, the works. My sister just had hot fudge. Looking back, I think I won on both counts. That is a great story, Becky. What I love about that is the point that Becky makes is books are immersive and a commitment. You want to read a book, you really have to commit time to it. And I think it has been shown kids are reading less these days. So that's great. I love that. All right, well, let's start to wrap up the conversation with this. I want to go around the table and ask if I'm overly optimistic when I think of it this way. Jenny Reedman-Dangler's here, who has been working with families as a licensed clinical social worker. These issues of online and balance have come up in your own practice. And I'm optimistically thinking that, as Mike Johansson has pointed out, smartphones are still relatively new. They're less than a decade old. We can now have the internet at the fingertips. The sum of human knowledge throughout history is in our hands at any moment, which is an amazing power. And like anything else, we're like children who are excited and don't know how to stop. But now that we've had a generation to start working through it, I'm optimistic that we will naturally gear it back. And whether it's children or adults, we won't find that addiction, that so appealing. I hope I'm right, but I don't know if that's just optimistic. What do you think, Jenny?
I'm feeling fairly optimistic as well. I think parents in my experience working with families, I've worked with parents who are very conscientious about this issue and want to explore things to put in place so that their child doesn't become overly addicted, as you will, as you said, to social media. And in general, parents are concerned about wanting to make sure that their child is developing good social skills and good problem-solving skills outside of the phone. So I'm feeling pretty optimistic as well.
Mike Johansson?
Yeah, the bright sign I've seen is that in this critical practice of social media class is that the students are required, if they don't already have them, to have accounts in 6 different social platforms because we use them throughout the course. The positive sign I'm seeing is I've had students this semester come up to me and saying, once the class is over, can I delete the account? And I say, absolutely. You need to know how to use these tools for business and organizational purposes, but if you don't want to keep a personal one now, by all means. And I would have expected that once they'd been exposed to those 6 platforms, if they didn't have all 6 before, they would just keep them going. So I think, you know, they're making some critical choices.
That's good to hear that. Carol, what do you think?
I think a balance will come. My daughter's 25, and she chose to get off of Facebook because there was just too much junk going on. And I see a balance, and it really, as far as for the kids, the parents and the adults in their lives are the role models. If you're going to use it as a crutch or as a babysitter, there'll be a problem. If you use it wisely and you teach them some skills, then the balance will be there, and you know we can go forward more positively.
Well, Steve Amon, real quick, one more time, to get online to go check out Sanctuary at Crowfield Farm, which inspired this conversation with the generation at risk, unplugging your grandchildren and connecting them with nature. You got 2 events coming up, July 25th and September 19th. You're out in Wayne County, and you're online where?
CrowfieldSanctuary.org.
I have to end the question on where digitally people can find you, but that's okay. They will find you, but they don't have to stay connected digitally. Congratulations on that program and the success you've already had, and thanks for sharing your thoughts with us, Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Great panel this hour. Important conversation as we move towards these warm mother months. It's an important conversation every day. Thanks for listening to member-supported public radio.